Welcome to Free and Local, a series of five programmes where Near FM, together with a group of people from the National Council for the Blind of Ireland, visit some of the fantastic cultural places of interest we have here on Dublin's north side. We're hoping that the input from the National Council for the Blind will allow people to understand the experience of being visually impaired and help see past people's limitations. The official guides at each of the venues will help to make the visits as visual as possible, bringing them to life with vivid descriptions that you, our listeners, can also enjoy. Every one of the world-class places of interest we will visit are within easy reach, open to the public, and even better, free of charge. Come along with us and experience them anew, using all your senses, as we explore some of the best that North Dublin has to offer. This is programme 4 in our series, Free and Local, visiting freely accessible places of cultural interest here on Dublin's north side. As we said last week, we're still on the grounds of Phoenix Park, just across the road from Orison Outron, visiting Farmley House.
He has to go now. He's tied okay. For time. We've okay. A tour booked in Horsemouth 1. So if you don't mind.
We're going to begin this tour now. And we're going to go up the ramp and into the house to his side. Okay?
Come on then.
If you all follow me.
Come on now.
I'll
follow Eamon there.
Just wait here for a minute for a few more giants. Okay, folks, we just make our way in here, please. Thank you. You wouldn't mind holding this door open, would you? Because I had to lead them into the room.
They're not very wide, these doors. Shar, just put the door away. Shar, you go first. Sinead, hold on.
Thank you.
Just right now, Shar.
Yeah, we try and keep away from the curtains. Okay, if you come towards me. Okay, thank you. That's grand. Lovely. Well, the first thing to do is to welcome you all to Farmley House. My name is Eamon. Pleased to see you all. Now, this beautiful house has a very interesting history. It started off as a relatively modest-sized Georgian house in the 18th century. And then in 1873, it was bought by Edward Cecil Guinness. He was the great-grandson of the famous Arthur Guinness, who originated Guinness Brewery, which I'm sure most of you have heard of. And when he bought this house, it was bought as a summer house, actually outside the Phoenix Park. That surprises many people because you have to access the park to access the house. So it was a country residence for the Guinnesses in Dublin. Most of the living was in the Guinness townhouse, 80 Stephen's Green. And today we call that house Ivy House. It's our Department of Foreign Affairs. Now, in 1999, this beautiful house was sold to the Irish state. It was to be the state guest house. And that means when we have dignitaries or heads of state coming from abroad, almost certainly this is where they will stay in Ireland. It's also a venue for top-level conferences. And indeed, on really popular days such as Africa Day or Japan Day, we can have well over 15,000 people on the estate. Now, this beautiful room is designed to facilitate the hanging of those silk-embroidered panels. Now, I didn't say tapestries because they're not tapestries. Tapestries are woven on a loom. These are stitched, individual stitches with silk thread. And the colours are really vibrant, even after 300 years. So the whole room is designed around them. And I find it interesting that the curtains, well, they're the originals, going back to the late 19th century. Between 1881 and 4, this house almost doubled in size. It's now a 40,000 square foot mansion. Okay. And there's beautiful grounds outside to walk around, a beautiful 4-acre walled garden as well. Now, symbolism is very, very important in Victorian and Edwardian houses. And sometimes the function of a room, the original function, well, you can get clues from the ceiling. But in this case, we don't. It's a Neo-Jacobean-style ceiling. There's no clues. So instead, the artwork sometimes can provide clues. And behind the dining table, there's two niches. Both have the attendance of Bacchus, beautiful sculptures. And Bacchus was the Roman god of wine. It's for that reason they hold bunches of grapes and drinking cups. Wining, dining, Bacchus, dining room, telling us what the function of the room was and indeed still is today. And even without the dining table here, we'd work it out. And I find it a huge coincidence, and nothing but a coincidence, that when we look at state china, it's the emblem of the state is the Brian Brew harp. It's the oldest surviving Irish harp in existence. The original is in Trinity College Library in the Long Room. music is very strong in our culture. That's why it's the emblem of the state. But also, as I say, coincidental, but a happy one, that it's also the trademark of Guinness. It was registered as a trademark by Guinness in London in the 1870s, long before the state was born in 1922, so an agreement was reached over its use. And it's a great agreement, very simple. The pillar of the harp is to the left for the state and to the right for the company. Elegant in its simplicity. If you just turn around slightly, what we have is a beautifully carved doorway, architrave richly carved, but especially the overdoor. Very symbolic. There's an urn standing proud of a recessed roundel, and underneath it, upward curving cornucopias, and their horns of plenty. They're bulging with food, and they symbolise bountiful times. And of course, it's no accident. Guests come into the dining room using that doorway. They walk underneath the signifier for plenty. They're not going to leave hungry in this room. As I say, nothing accidental, everything is thought out. The doorway that we came through, in contrast, you're not supposed to notice it. Even the handle is of the same wood. It's called a jib door, and it merges into the wall. And it was always a problem for architects in the 18th and 19th centuries where to site the jib door in a dining room. Too close to a kitchen, you got the smell of knives. Too far away, well, food got cold. And the reason this particular site was chosen, the food lift was almost opposite, and it went straight down into the basement. That was the former kitchen area. So food could come up quickly on the lift, but you were far enough away from the source of smells and noise. Very simple, but very effective. One room we can't see today because there's work going on, and it's the study. But we're going to move on to the hallway. On we go. Okay. Now here we are in the beautiful hallway of Farmley House. And I did mention when we were in the dining room the importance of the design. The architect between 1881 and 4 was James Franklin Fuller. Now, on my tours, I always speak about the porch. There's nothing really original about the porch. It's beautiful. But, of course, many porches of big houses, as we call them in Ireland, are as well. But interesting, nonetheless, it's called a porche cochère, the porch at Farmley. And it's wide because it was built to accept horse-drawn carriages. So they can come up to the front door, and on our frequently wet days in Ireland, passengers can alight. They don't get their hair wet. It's a covered porch as well. Mm-hmm. Now, at the moment, work is going on outside the front door where they're replacing wooden sets. Literally, blocks of wood were set into the ground and they were placed there to muffle or deaden the sound of the carriage wheels. You wouldn't hear them. Mm-hmm. Neither would you hear the iron-shod horse's hooves scraping off stone. Simple technology that works. Mm-hmm. You made your entrance through the front door, right in front of us. You can see it here. You walk up the Portland stone steps, but immediately, and even on a day in February, we can see beautiful, soft, natural light pouring through a top-lit ceiling. And of course, it's no accident. That's the reason why you have so many side windows in the vestibule. What the architect has created here is a lantern filled with natural light. So if it's like this in the middle of February, May, June, July and August is really impressive. Mm-hmm. Walking into a pool of sunlight. Mm-hmm. Again, nothing accidental, all planned. So you continue walking up the Portland stone steps. You're flanked with these green Connemara marble columns, and they support a beautiful compartmented coffered ceiling. And of course, that ceiling draws your eye to the grand staircase. And if we just turn around slowly, this hugely impressive staircase is in contrast to the stairs which I use mostly when I bring tours up into the house, the servant stairs. They're very plain, they're very functional. In this particular case, it's very elaborate because it's used by family and guests. It's made of an expensive hardwood, San Domingo mahogany, and the iron balustrade is an exact copy of 80 Stevens Green, former townhouse of the Guinnesses, but today our Department of Foreign Affairs. Now, the rooms, which most people tend to want to see, are bedrooms. But they're never on public view in Farmley. So I'm going to describe them for you. Mm-hmm. On the first floor, 9 bedrooms are very much Victorian Edwardian in style. Mm-hmm. That means they're in character with this ground floor. But on the second floor, just think extremely luxurious hotel room, contemporary 21st century, anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So there's a choice. Mm-hmm. Very nice mm-hmm. choice.
Many bedrooms.
Nine.
There's 9 on the first floor, 5 on the second. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I always point out the painting, which is to the left. Mm-hmm. It's a huge painting. yeah. And it's a stunning painting. It's called Staggett Bay. And it's by Sir Edwin Landseer. He was one of Queen Victoria's favourite painters and recognises him as one of the greatest painters of animals. In this picture we can see why. What we have is a beautiful, noble stag. He's an imperial stag, trapped in the shallow waters of a Scottish lake, and he's been chased into it by two dogs, two hounds. The one on the left has been badly gored. We can see the blood running from it. However, the one on the right is very clever. He keeps well out of range of the stag's antlers, barks away, and we can see his agitation. The hair is bristling on his back. But now the stag's head. The eyes are bulging, the nostrils are flared, and the tongue is lolling around. And while that may suggest panic and exhaustion, which I'm sure it does, I've been advised by people who manage deer, the stag is actually at his most ferocious. And they're the characteristics he will exhibit. He's turned on his tormentors, and because he's such a big, powerful animal, he'll probably emerge victorious. And the detail that Landseer has added of a really dark sky suggests doom. And in the upper right-hand corner, we have a bird of prey awaiting its opportunity. One painting with so much detail.
Many paintings on the walls would be in the building.
There's quite a lot in the building in total. There's paintings even upstairs. Many of them are from the state collection. However, Staggett Bay is on loan from the Guinness family.
Can I ask you, are the chandeliers Waterford or are they...?
The chandeliers in the corridor are Waterford. I'm going to tell you a little story about them in a few seconds. We're going to move down a little bit more and I'm going to talk about the Waterford crystal chandeliers.
Sorry, I just
noticed
the photographs of the Queen in the hallway there.
Yeah, the British Queen stayed here in 2011.
Oh, did she?
President Obama also visited.
Which floor did she stay on? The 21st century or the...
I wasn't here at the time. I think it's the first floor. Here's President Obama. Many people often comment. Yeah. Holds the holy stick like a baseball bat. Mm-hmm. But I suppose it's something he's more familiar with. If we look up at the ceiling in this spinal corridor, we can see two beautiful Waterford crystal chandeliers. I never get tired of telling this story. Yeah. Are absolutely the same in every respect except one. To 12 Waterford crystal chandeliers presented to Westminster Abbey, that great abbey opposite the Houses of Parliament in London, by the Guinnesses, in 1965, to mark the 900th anniversary of the consecration of that great abbey. And the only respect in which these chandeliers differ, these two are 5 times smaller. So it gives you that immediate connection with scale. Okay.
Good God,
they're huge.
I'm going to do my best that everybody will fit in to the next room. It's a pretty small room. It literally is a pretty and small room. Okay, on we go. Okay, a little bit of audience participation. Who do you think might have used this room the most, gentlemen or ladies? Well, ladies is right, because there's a few things that I would look for when I walk into a room of a period house. Well, the first thing is I always look at ceilings. Secondly, I look at the shape of a room. Especially the small rooms. Now, what I'm going to say now, they're not golden rules in any way, shape or form. They're just clues. Square or rectangular shaped rooms are angular shapes. They're male shapes. Sometimes an oval shaped room, where we now stand, or a round shaped room, female shaped. Oak used to be considered a male wood. And there's no oak panelling, or indeed any panelling in this room. So it was the lady's boudoir, her private room. And it's often said that in the 19th century, I would probably need an invitation to get in here. So it's our private room. And the most outstanding feature of this beautiful, elegant room is the ceiling. It dates from the 1790s, and it's very possibly by one of our greatest stuccadors of the day, Michael Stapleton. And it's in the Robert Adam, the neoclassical style. It's beautiful. And hanging from it, we have a Venetian chandelier, so flamboyant, it really goes with the room. Now, another detail in this room is very, very discreet. And I'm just going to point it out to you. Now, a secret door.
Oh, I see.
And that used to open onto a secret passage which meandered its way down to a small room beside the front door.
That's if she wanted to sneak in her lovers.
You know, we was thinking of that.
Okay, we're going to make our way into the next room, which is the library. On we go.
Oh, they're like feather design and flowers on the ground.
This beautiful library contains over 5,000 items. And largely built up by Benjamin Guinness. His picture is in the black and white photograph on the table. He was the last of the Guinnesses to live at Farmley House. He died in 1992. And indeed, he was the last of the Guinnesses with that famous surname to be chairman of the company. And was a great book collector. Consequently, what we have at Farmley Library are some of the finest collections of Irish bookbinding from the 18th, 19th and 20th centuries to be found in either Britain or Ireland. And Irish bookbinding has a worldwide reputation. Now, the oldest book in this collection dates from the 13th century, and it's a copy of a 12th century original by Gerald of Wales. It's called The Topography of Ireland, based on one of the first written descriptions of Ireland and its people. And we have a 16th century Irish primer, once owned by Elizabeth I, the Virgin Queen, an introductory book into the Irish language with the equivalent translations in medieval Latin and English, and many first editions, including Ulysses and Gulliver's Travels. Here we have a working desk. Mm. We have a full-time librarian. For example, if you needed access to one of the rare books, you would need to go through her.
Yes, yeah.
Mm. So it's a working library.
Yeah, good.
And to get up to gallery level, tucked away in the bottom right-hand corner, behind a very elegant door, is a spiral staircase. Oh. And it revolves around the brass newel post. And if we just turn around slowly, this painting represents the installation of Albert Edward, the eldest son of Queen Victoria. He's Prince of Wales at that time, 1868. And he's been installed as a Knight of the Order of St. Patrick. It was an order of chivalry very similar to the Order of the Garter in England and the Thistle in Scotland, but disbanded in 1922 when Ireland became a free state. Now, very prominent in the front pew at St. Patrick's Cathedral, we see in front of us, are the Guinnesses. Very prominent for two reasons. First reason is, in the very same decade, in the 1860s, they've paid for the restoration of St. Patrick's. It's a good reason to get a good seat, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And the second reason, well in train at this time, political power, influence and wealth is moving from the aristocracy, the landed class, to the plutocracy, the people who make their money through industry. And of course, the richest family in Ireland are the Guinnesses. Mm-hmm. And included, we have the artist, bottom right-hand corner, a man dressed in black, three brass buttons on his coat. And it's interesting, we cannot see his face, we cannot see his profile. He's painted himself in, but obviously doesn't take the most prominent position. He's a brilliant name for an artist. His name is Michelangelo Hayes. Great. On we go. This beautiful room is called the Nobel Room. Ireland has four winners of the Nobel Prize for Literature that are represented in here. On my left, in the Louis Le Brocq prints, we have W.B. Yeats on top. We have Samuel Beckett underneath. And on my right, we have a man who never won it. And it surprises many people. It's James Joyce. But because so many people think if he wasn't the best, then certainly he was among the best Irish writers, it was felt unfair to exclude him. So that's why he's here. George Bernard Shaw won it. And right behind me to my left, Seamus Heaney. Our most recent winner. A lady came in and said, this must be the music room. 99% of people say what you say when they walk into this room. I'm going to move into the centre of the room. I'm going to stand underneath this chandelier. And immediately, the sound, the distribution of sound is excellent. You all recognise it. The acoustics are excellent. And that's due to the saucer-shaped dome of the ceiling. Piano behind me. And the ballroom is always to my left when I face this direction. What do you think the original function of this room was? And I'm talking about the original function. Music room is what most people tend to say, just like this lady said. But one of the things I said we should always do when we walk into a major reception room or indeed a small room of a period house is look up. Yeah. And on the frieze, we have bunches of grapes and vine leaves suggesting wining. Jeez. And in the spandrels, we've got baskets of fruit. Dining. It's a small dining room. And the style of this room is 1820s. The ballroom wasn't built until 1896, 97. Now, if it was a small music room, perhaps you'd see little violins and harps and trophies on the ceiling. So apart from the beauty of ceilings, sometimes you get an interpretation of the original function. And something is, which is unusual but not unique, we have no chimney over the fireplace. But it's a functioning fireplace, because many people think it's just purely decoration. Mm-hmm. How could a fire possibly function without a chimney? Because you know you need a draft or a firewood, right? You need somewhere for the smoke to go, or you'd be smoked out of it. In this case, the flues are diverted right and left of the window, and they converge up near the roofline into a chimney. And maybe one or two of you would like to walk around the piano, look at the hearthstone, and you'll see scorch marks on it, where hot coals have fallen out, scorched the marble over generations.
How did Sean dig it in?
That was the biggest difficulty. But he came to another chimney. Sorry, the secret's out now.
Okay.
All of this work, all of this arrangement, was to achieve a piece of art. So
that'd be quite rare.
It's rare, but not unique. But it is. It is rare. We don't treat it as a window. We treat it as a picture. It's called a living landscape picture. And that means the images that you see, because there's more than one image, they constantly change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, most people who have a fireplace in their house, it's the focal point, almost always tends to be. And above it, you have either a mirror or you have a picture. The image in a picture, if it hung over the fireplace for 90 years, is still the same image, no matter how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. If it's a mirror, it's either your reflection or the room's reflection. Okay? Here, what you see through the window constantly changes. It lives from second to second. In 90 years, not one second would replicate another. Light and shade. Even the grass grows. Birds land, take off. Different trees blossom, spring flowers and so on. You could have rain lashing against the window, roaring fire lit, wind blowing the leaves off the trees, pushing clouds ahead of them, and you're combining the basic elements of fire, wind and water, and you're able to see all that through a space you're never normally able to do. Okay, on. We're in the ladies' public room. It's the drawing room. That's what we call it today. Back then it was called the withdrawing room. Ladies withdrew into their public space. The gentleman's public room was the library. Here's the man who bought the house. Bought it in 1873 as a summer house for the Guinnesses in Dublin. And he's painted by a Dublin-born artist, William Orpin. And William Orpin was knighted for his work as a war artist. If we look around the doors, we can see beautiful portieres that were made in France. And they're off the period. And the next room that we're going to visit is the fantastic ballroom. On we go. Now here we are in this beautiful ballroom. It's the largest room in the house. It's over 23 metres long. It's over 7 metres wide. And it's in the Louis XVI style, which is a very, very elaborate style of decoration. And there's so much detail that when I look at the left-hand side of the door, I can see a musical instrument on the top panel, garlands of flowers, baskets of fruit, sphinxes, burning braziers, Corinthian capitals on the plasters. There's so much. But I think one of the most incredible things about this room is the colour, the off-white colour. It gives you two tricks of the eye, two optical illusions. And these are, it makes the largest room in the house appear more spacious. But the second trick of the eye, due to the colour, it makes you think that everything you look at is plaster, but it's not. It's only the decorative high relief is plaster, the rest is wood. By being painted off white, the colour of plaster, the automatic assumption in your head, plaster everywhere. And believe it or not, this beautiful floor, which we now stand on, is the original floor of the ballroom, which was built between 1896-97. So again, it's another feature which has really stood the test of time. The central chandelier was made in France in the late 19th century. The chandeliers at either end are of Waterford crystal, and they were added during the time the house was restored between 1999 and 2001. And either side of the fireplace, we see two very interesting sofas. Sometimes they're called cosy corners or whispering corners. Okay, we're going to move into the conservatory.
Excuse me, what's the floor made of, please?
It's oak.
Or oak wood, is it? Oak. Yeah.
And you can see all the stiletto heels to the wood.
Are there?
Yeah.
God, it smells beautiful.
Now, here we are in the conservatory. It's the last room on the tour. And some of you have commented on the smell. It's beautiful. I think it's jasmine. Usually I tell people it's my aftershave. But there you go. We are standing on the original marble floor of this beautiful conservatory, first laid in 1901. So it's Edwardian. It's the very beginning of the Edwardian period. And I did say when I began the tour, the core of the house is 18th century. Then we've walked through Victorian rooms, such as the ballroom, where we are now, the conservatory. Edwardian, last addition to Farmley House. And, you know, when the state bought the house, much work was needed to restore it. The conservatory needed a lot of work. The wooden frames had largely rotted away, glass was slipping, and it was decided to completely rebuild the conservatory from the original floor up. Now, I can say with complete confidence that virtually everything today that's around us is as it was in 1901. And the reason for my confidence is this. The original plans were retained by the original supplier and designer. And it's as if the original blueprint was reused to restore it. Even to the extent that many of the flowers, the shrubs, the plants that you see today, they would have been fashionable back then.
The conservatory looks pretty much like the one in the Botanic Gardens.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, they're very similar. That was Turner in the Botanic Gardens. This is Mackenzie and Moncore. Okay. Now, I'm going to conclude the tour, so I want to thank you very much for your attention. Hopefully, we see you again in not too distant time, okay?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. It's obvious that the Guinness family like to live in style, but now it's time to find out what our regal colleagues from the NCBIA made of the visit.
It was very good. See what they were describing, yeah. It was very good, the way he described it. You felt as if you were in the picture, like, the way he was giving the details of it. Explained very well now.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was nice, yeah. And the tour guide was very good at explaining to us, like, who are totally blind. He had a thing of explaining each and everything. So we had a picture in our mind how that thing looked like. I mean, when you just go into the room, you can just feel how big the room by listening to the echo in the room. The sound is different. Yeah, very interesting, yeah.
I enjoyed it.
But I feel there's yards and yards. Yeah, yards and yards of information. Because when they said there was a door going from the ladies' boudoir, I assumed it was a passage up to a bedroom, but it wasn't, was it? I was disappointed.
I thought it was very educational, and I liked the chandeliers and the rooms that we were in. I like to see the ceilings and the walls, and I like the floors in the ballroom. They were very nice. It was all very interesting, yeah. We were given a good explanation of every room we went into, and the floors were the main feature, and then the ceilings, and in the conservatory, it was the light system in the conservatory.
I thought it was a little short. I think it could have been longer, more detailed, really, historically. Yeah.
There must be huge history behind it.
I think perhaps we were a bit unfortunate there. There was a tour coming behind us.
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
But it's quite interesting. It's a lovely, lovely house.
We hope our listeners have enjoyed the visit to Farmley House as much as we did. Next week, we're going to Bull Island and Clontarf. Make sure you come along.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.